And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Unafeared here on Declare Your Independence of me, Ernest Hancock and Tony Paw, where it's a blowin', but we got a windmill. You know, Bob's got this little windmill, because every time it blows out here, it's like, damn it, it's blowing, but I'm making power. But he's got this nice windmill he did just to, it's a mental health thing. You know, but I'm making power, but only... I don't know, it's blowing 10, 15 miles an hour or something, you get like 200 watts. Big freaking deal. Well, like power, maybe, you know, nothing. You know, think about it. You know, a 60-watt light bulb. So, you know, I guess you can read. but it's a mental health thing. You know, you just kind of look at it and you go, yeah, I'm making power. But overnight, you know, yeah, you charge some batteries, a little bit of something. But, wind is not really a efficient way of making power. Yeah, Bob being here a little bit, we'll talk about it. He's on the phone, but the it's solar. That's what. So he's got nickel iron batteries that he has. He got those back in the day. I tell you, we're going to have John Ross is scheduled to be on this morning. Donna's trying to call him. He's not answering the phone. Are you trying again? Yeah, she's texting him. She'll get it all taken care of. But I have one of the original books from back 1994. And I was wondering what happened to that thing. Bob had it. You know, Bob, get on the mic, you freaking thief. You know? So he goes, well, I know where that is. It's on my shelf. He borrowed it. And did you even start?
I've read some of it.
Put the microphone on, man. Talk. Okay.
3, 2, 1. Yeah.
Okay.
Here.
Did you read it?
By parts of it.
Yeah, and then it was like a thing.
It's a thing.
It's like Atlas Shrugged.
Yeah, it's a book. It's a serious book.
You know that I'm gonna retire on that book.
Yeah, no, I'm amazed. Like, say, it was $28.95 in the inside front cover, and what do we see on Amazon?
$1,100 or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, I mean, oh my God.
Yeah, I talked to John yesterday, scheduled him on, and he goes like this. He goes, well, you can still buy it new on Amazon. And I go, really? I go on there, it's like $1,100. I go, yeah, no way. No kidding, you don't want it out, you know, whatever. But he's got a new book that he's doing, he said. So I don't know what his deal is. Donna's dealing with him now. But, you know, I've talked to John over the years. What happened was, when he first wrote it, he was contacting a lot of people. I think he contacted us because of our Second Amendment is for Everyone. You know, this is what happened. In 1994, we did a bunch of initiatives, and one of them was, and this is why we got the printing press that we had. You know, Bob got that, spent, I don't know, $2,500, $3,000, something. It was like real money back then. And, it was because of the way the media was. We were just like, well, screw you. We can buy ink too, you know? So we did. And we had at our workshop in the early 90s, it was, we had, God, I don't know, 3,500 square feet of kick ass. And we had in the back area, we had a printing room, and we learned how to do offset printing. And we had some of the guys that were still friends with Art Jackson and, you know, DeFilippi. It's DeFilippi, you know. And I just, he goes, God, and Ernie is DeFilippi. I go, well, you should have told me 20 years ago, man. You know.
That's the guy who had all the printers out on, like, the front deck of his house.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
He had it going on, man. He had a print shop.
He still has it.
Nice.
He said he hadn't used it for, God, since he did stuff for us back in the day.
Yeah, he was the guy I was figuring out. We'll just sell the AB Dick 360 to him when we got rid of it.
Well, so. I talked to him, and he had somebody come over, and they just took everything.
Oh, nice.
You know,
well, that's
so
good.
Hopefully
he went to somebody who's going to put it to good use.
Yeah, so it's one of his contacts, and, you know, they wow, this is pretty. I go, yeah.
Maybe they can owe us a little, you know, good deal on some printing.
Well, I think we're getting a little something when we're doing a bunch of this stuff. We're getting the cards done and everything. So I went over last night, and we spent time. If you guys look, if you're on the Telegram, you can see the Christmas cards that we're doing. So we spent time on that last night. Fortunately, I found the files, the PSD files on the hard drive of everything. I have everything somewhere, you know, like in Bob's bookshelf.
You need a hard drive to categorize all your hard drive stuff.
I got so much stuff that I could spend the rest of my life organizing and doing stuff. I have everything. It's just, you know, damn, you know. But fortunately, I found the original Christmas card, the love cards that we did for Ron Paul in New Hampshire in the 07-08 election cycle. And it was really a big hit. They worked really well. And unfortunately, I found that file, and we redid it and love bust it and everything. And so it's going to be, you know, part of a thing. Well, we have also, it's called Trash Can Flyers. Trash Can Flyers are these, you get 8.5 by 14, and you split it in half. So you get two up, and it's a flyer that looks like you got a citation on your trash can. And people, you know, you didn't recycle enough, or you threw your trash away wrong, or whatever. So we would take those, and we do them up by the thousands. And the first time we did it was when the Patriots and the Giants played the Super Bowl here in Phoenix in 2008. And we had printed them up, but we hadn't distributed them yet, and I just had them down at the workshop. And somebody that lived in Glendale just saw them and took a stack, you know, and they just took them. I don't even know who it was. I don't remember who it was. So they took them, and during the Super Bowl, they went and they put them around in the neighborhood around the Super Bowl in Glendale there. And we have phone numbers on it. And you know, it goes through, and he had some original copies there. I said, here, take these. And I go, no, you keep them. You kept them good, you know. I know where they're at. And I took pictures of them. You go on the Telegram, you'll see. Now, fortunately, this was 2013, the one that he had. Now, we've done them several times over the years, and we always get press. We always do. Lots of news coverage. And they just, you know, it's a thing. But Donna, go on Freedom's Phoenix and put in trash flyer, and there's a I did it in the Telegram. It has the link there. I put it in last night. Go ahead and take that link and put it in the first hour so people can go and look at it and see what's how you go look in the archive. Well, and there was like a, you know, television coverage area. Probably, I think the link's gone now, but we included the PDFs of it so people can print it themselves. Everything I do, I always do where everybody else can do it. That's one of the benefits of Freedom's Phoenix, is I go, looky what we did, and you can do it too, and you just, you know, print them up. Well, they put them out, and then all of a sudden, the next day, we see in the newspaper, it said, pay no attention to the orange flyers. I love when they do that. You know?
So what did we do?
Stop thinking about boats. So we had that flyer went out, and on it, we always put phone numbers. Well, the phone number, it's like, you know, need to call this number to schedule your interview with the man or something like that. I'll tell you about this, and it's just neon flashing obvious that we're going to get attention for it. I'll explain why when we come back and how we... Arizona, it's almost like it's not fair. Bob and I and the guys here, we're just going to We're gonna have some fun.
Environmentally jacked up.
Roads.
Lead batteries.
It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Okay, lots of stuff to talk about. Lots of stuff. I'll go ahead and tell you guys, finish the story here so you know what's up. All right. Where it came from is I saw on the internet, somebody had done something like, an idea of little Slim Jim flyers and everything, and all of a sudden in our activist mind we're going, oh, we know what we're doing, And it what came with the 9/11, they came out with, these guys are the deep state, they, them, those want to rule the planet and so on. They have the resources to do whatever they want because they're the government. And they came up with this logo, and it was called Total Information Awareness. And the logo is real. And it has a all-seeing eye pyramid in the logo with the eye gazing down, and it has like a logo that's like it's looking down on the entire planet Earth. And we go, what? And I thought it was a spoof, a fake. They really did this. And we made such a big deal out of it that they changed the logo. They took out the pyramid eye looking down or something. I mean, these guys are sick, man.
Oh, no. You start looking more and more at the modern culture, movies. They're in your face about what they're doing.
They
are in your face about what they're going to, they're going to take the right side of their sheet, and they let you know.
They're going to do the Billy Jack thing, and it's part of their culture. I mean, they think, it's okay if they do it, if they told you they're going to do it and nobody bitched I don't know who they think is going to complain. How are they going to complain? Well, they're not. We don't care. We're just going to do it, So the Total Information Awareness Program was, this all-knowing surveillance state of everything, and there's a lot of stuff, later Snowden came out about and all this kind of stuff. Well, when it happened, we took and we created a website. I think I still have the domain. We need to start working on that and stuff, too. Oh, God, man, I don't have enough to do. And it's at aztiphotline.info. That's what, I think Pal Gamble got it. aztiphotline.info. So we put that all over it, and then we created a page. And the page was when they were going, see something, say something, and they wanted gas meter readers and UPS drivers and FedEx people and all these people that go to all these homes, and they report. They go, oh, yeah, this guy, he has, guns. They're buying. They even were saying, people that buy a lot of baby food or diapers or stock in their preppers, and they get, everyone was like, what? So I remember Renee Houlihan in 4409, they did a skit where they recorded it, and she called the Department of Homeland Security about, her neighbors. I don't know. They buying a lot of diapers, and they recorded it, and they had the guy, oh, yeah, well, what do you, yeah, well, it, well, how much is a lot? Well, I don't know, man. There's a lot, and they're gonna buy diapers. I'm reporting them. They're doing the Karen, lawn Nazi thing. And recorded it, and they took it seriously. It was very interesting. That, I wonder if we could find that. I wonder if 4409 got demonetized. But I don't know if his videos are still up. He stopped posting, so maybe they're still there.
Nobody IPFS'd his stuff.
Donna, go on YouTube and see if you can find 4409's account. And then send that to Thomas and Derek, and see if they'll IPFS.
it was great work. A lot of it was excellent work. It'd be a shame to lose it.
Oh, he was famous, for a long time. He just set, he went, at pirates, exposing the pirates or something like that, because they're pirates, so pirates are really a good thing, to kiss my butt. But the point that he was making was that, these guys are just highwaymen. They're right. The Sheriff of Nottingham, taking your money. So we've had a lot of fun over the years, but the impact that we've had has been that when we met with Al Rodriguez, was that the guy from the Phoenix police, that we worked with him for a long time because he was tasked with the confrontation prevention squad of the Phoenix Police Department. And they would always be around all the stuff. And we were at different meetings, and they kind of got outed. They were taking pictures of everybody's car and license plates and all that kind of stuff. And we kind of caught them, you know. And he's like, hey, man, I'm just doing my job, you know, and stuff. So, oh, we got a guy to talk to. Okay. You know, so if you go and you do Ernest Hancock CNN, it'll, you know, blow up all over the place. And you'll see, you know, where we mentioned him in the interview on CNN with, what was his name, Sanchez or something, McSanchez. And that's who I was talking about during that. We outed a bunch of stuff. Well, the deal was is that we would always call him when we were doing some big thing, and we go, look, Al, we're going to go here and do this, and we're going to protest that, and we're going to, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it wasn't asking permission. We were just saying, look, you know, we know what's going to happen. The man's going to have some Iraq veteran, young, you know, 30-year-old guy that's going to go out and get some. And he's going to be a butthead. We're going to sue, which we always did. And we're going to be buttheads about it. So if you guys want to save yourself some time, get your boys in line and get somebody out there that knows what's going on and knows what this Constitution thing's about. And then we'll do the thing. So that's what they did. They would always come out and, you know, stand down. You know, this isn't going to go well. Leave him alone. And then, oh, one time we were at gun show and the Attorney General's office, they just didn't like us being there. And they go, well, you have to this and sign this. And what it was is if you sign this piece of paper when you're protesting, in there it said that you would obey all security forces orders and some whatever the heck. So we would take Sharpies and put a line through that, and then we'd sign it, and they go, damn it, you know, we don't, you know, we put lines through, we don't like this, or this. And, you know, it's like, oh, we'll pick up the trash. Okay, we'll do that, you know, and that kind of thing. And then they're like, oh, and then they go off and come back, and they go, and I go, well, you can always arrest us. And they go, we're not going to arrest you because we know you want us to. You know, you remember that shit? God, these guys are just amazing. So it's when you say no, you know, they got to go through their stuff. And if you're afraid of getting arrested, you shouldn't be an activist. You know, this is just, and I've been arrested a few times, but, you know, never convicted, you know.
Yeah, usually they just let you out later. You haven't gone to court, have you?
No, they just let you go. They want you.
They just remove you from the area for a time
period.
And
then we go right back, you know. If you go back, you can't go back. We'll let you go, but you can't go back. I go, we better keep me here because that's where I'm going.
I'm going back.
You know, and so it just became a thing. And it had to be credible. I never bluff. That's the one thing you can't do. Because they'll call your bluff, they'll bring out the guns, and they're like, all right, you know, let's play. I never got all angry or mad like a lot of these, you know, videos you'll see, and they're yelling at them, and I go, no, we'll go through the process.
Just turn around, put my hands behind my back, have a nice day. It's all good, officer. It's a thing.
We're really going to arrest you. I know. No, we really, really are. I go, I really, really know. I'm like, so they go, you're under arrest. Okay, and I drop, turn around, put the gun. Well, everybody, you know, doing video and all that kind of stuff. But back then, video was, you know, you got a video camera? Ooh, you're so special. So it's been, you know, a thing. And we're going through this again here. But these guys are serious. You know, they were all just playing before. Now they got some law or something. Well, I'm ready to challenge them. Now let's play. So I may be talking after a jail sentence here. Yeah. but somebody's got to do it.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Okay. We finished the story on Trash Can Flyer. So Total Information Awareness logo is there, and we wanted people to know that it was real. So we created AZTipHotline.info. And I'm not sure it even goes anywhere now, but we're going to repopulate, you know, a page and everything. Work. Anyway, so in the top left-hand corner, it had that logo, Total Information Awareness. Well, then it had, you know, we came by and, you know, looked at your stuff, and we put them in the trash cans in the early afternoon after they had dumped them. Because, you know, I was never a big fan of going up and putting, you know, door hangers on people's property and going, I'm just, you know, that's not cool, you know. and somebody went on my property and did that, you know, I'd be pissed. So it was when you put your trash can out on the public sidewalk, and you're in the public. And that was one thing is when you do your trash and they dump it, well, then it becomes like public property. You know, if they there's big all kinds of cases about them dumping it into the trash, you know, the dump truck or what do they call it, garbage truck or something. And at what point do they get to go through your trash? Do they just go through the trash? You know, they dump it in the thing. Can they go through it then?
Oh, yeah.
Well, if it kind of got mixed, you know, if they had the scoop come in and then it's part of everything, then they can search it, you know, kind of deal. Well, in Fountain Hills, which is a, you know, ritzy place east of Scottsdale out there, they had private trash service. You know, they had like several, you know. You just marketed for, you paid free market for whatever kind of trash service you had. Well, the municipality, of course, with waste management, you gotta use us. We gotta, you know, because there's too many dump trucks out there. They're doing, they're like messing up the roads. That's some BS that they come up with to get their monopoly. So the people were pissed. So we did one that says, "The hills have eyes," you know, Fountain Hills, and we had that logo, and they're taking the trash, and we did banner. Well, that was another thing. We had rebar we put into the ground. We just pounded it in, like a foot into the ground, stuck up a foot, and PVC that go over it, and it have like these flags. Like you go at car dealerships and so on, and they have these flags that kind of, you know, teardrop looking thing. And we made those ourselves in PVC and twine and Tyvek, you know, just, you know, the proper, you know, this plastic material we got now will work really good for that.
Right.
And because PVC was really cheap back then, like 79 cents for a 10-foot thing or something, and for like $1.40, we would have those things. Well, we'd do like 100 of them or something, and we'd go out and put them up. We've done that a bunch of times, too. Well, we go and put those all around Fountain Hills. The hills will have eyes, and we put a sight on it. All of a sudden, this is city council, 300 people show up. Well, Sheriff Arpaio lived out there, you know, and he'd come in. And I remember he'd come in and he goes, "Which side am I on this?" I go, "Sheriff, man, you're killing me, man." So he'd get up and speak against them doing, he's just looking which way the wind's blowing, you know. And so they eventually wound up doing it, but a lot of the guys lost their, you know, their city council seats over this thing. So we do this kind of stuff. And 4409 and Morpheus. Morpheus had a little motor 49cc on his bike, you know, that he drove around all the time. So he would take and put these flyers that we did on all the trash cans, you know, too. And this is how it would go. So imagine you got this, you know, like 5-inch wide by, you know, 14-inch flyer. And it's a bright orange. And it would, if you go into the Telegram, you know, I took pictures of it, and you can see it there. And I can zoom in here, and it'd go, "Sorry we missed you. While you were out, Agent 4409, and we had two prints. There was a black, and then we had a red over, and it looked like a red felt tip pen, you know, the way Jeff did it. And it looked like you filled it out. You know, they're all the same, but they look like you did it by hand, right? So it'd say, Agent 4409. Now, 4409 was, you know, it's the... It was a secret, and I'll tell you the secret. Here's the secret. It was the 44th president in 09. That's what it meant.
For Ron Paul.
For Ron Paul. It was RP 4409. 4409, 409, cleaning the whatever the hell, you know. We had a lot of fun with it. So it was like a big secret. So now you know the secret. 4409. Now it says, while you were out, our agent 4409 stopped by on behalf of, and then it has a bunch of check boxes, and it and which one did they check? Office of Total Information Awareness. Now, the others were CIA, FBI, NSA, INS, ATF, BSA, DEA, IRS, FAA, SEC, FDIC, other Department of Homeland Security, Transportation Security Administration, your local police department, all of the above. So we had Office Total Information Awareness check. And then it goes down and it says, because you were out, we decided to ask your neighbors, your children, your spouse about, you know, then it have, you know, check marks for unregistered firearms, suspicious behavior, recent purchases. And then another box goes, inspect your garden, your garage, your car, your pets, Then we let ourselves onto your residence or business, read your mail, email, diary, Rolodex, daily planner.
Oh, there wasn't one for shoot your dog?
Right. And then the one that we checked, it says, checked your waste. Garbage for suspicious purchases, sewage, smoking, birth control, illegal drugs, DNA sample collection. And the one we checked was, you know, we checked your garbage, okay? So this is on the garbage can. One of the other boxes, it says, place a wiretap on all communications, install video, audio surveillance equipment, conducted an inventory of all RFID tagged food and merchandise. See, this is when RFID tags are coming out, and they can just go by with a van, and they just scan your house.
Yes, they can.
They know what. See, this is all the stuff we wanted people to know. Well, now it's kind of like common knowledge, but back, you know, in, you know, 2008, they're the, what, you conspiracy nut? You know, we're going, yeah, you think so now. You know, they don't think so now anymore.
That RFID, when I was working at the plant, there's a lot of technology that
nuclear
that
power plant.
Yeah, they can sit there and, you know, for inventorying tools and things like that. And you could sit there and put receivers in buildings, and you go, where is this tool? And it would find it on the whole site, tell you what building it's in. That all these people with these smart refrigerators, how do you think it knows what your shopping list is going to be?
Yeah, it's like it can tell what's...
You know, it's not looking at the picture that's on the front of your, you know, those expensive fridge that you can look inside without opening the door, which is kind of weird. But that's how it builds your shopping list.
Yeah.
It's all these RFID tags.
You drive by somebody's house, and you... See, that was another thing. They created these RFID...
You're going to know all about it when they stick it in your hand to show that you had the COVID vaccine. That's coming.
Absolutely.
It's coming.
Because they can. Because they would. Until, as long as you let them. These RFID chips, what you see is the antenna that kind of spirals around, and it's like, you know, size of a stamp or something like that. But the chip is about the size of a period on the ingredients list on a thing. I mean, it's teeny tiny. And we had, she was a speaker, it was a woman, she got her doctorate in whatever the heck, she used to do a show and everything. She spoke at our Freedom Summit that we did in Manchester. And this was her big thing, man. She was like, here it comes. And they started doing it at Walmart, you know, like your razors and stuff, yeah, and their inventory and stuff. So it's, you know, fine technology,
oh,
do
no,
whatever.
It's a double-edged sword. There are really cool things on the positive side that come out of that technology. Also, very scary, evil things come out of that side of that technology.
Gee, I wonder which one the government's going to do. So what they would do, it'd be like dust. Well, there's so many numbers. It's kind of like a blockchain thing, you know, like a crypto. We'll talk about crypto here in a little bit, too. But the what it was is they could take these numbers, and you have enough that it's not that it identifies that you have Coca-Cola. It's which can. Every can of Coca-Cola ever has its own number.
Yep.
This is how sophisticated this is, okay? So what they would do is you'd go to a protest, and say you're in Washington, D.C., and a million man, woman, whatever the hell, and they would just cast this dust over everybody and then track you through the airports and back in your home, and it'd just be everywhere.
Yep.
So you're just tagged. This is what was going on. Well, you wanted people to know. How do you get people to know this? You got to scare them a little bit. You know,
we come back at your trash.
Yeah. I'm gonna tell you the whole story on this, because we're gonna do this again. And they know, they're just like, God, you freaking nigga. There ought to be a law. We're skating it.
You can put the Liberty Radio Network on the air in your area. Visit broadcast.lrn.fm to learn how. Broadcast.lrn.fm.
Freedom is the answer.
What's the question?
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
And Mr. Robert Anderson. All right. Uncovering the secrets, exposing the lies. We're not streaming because we don't have enough bandwidth. It's like an internet thing. That's one thing. You know, this is Starlink. All right. Now, when you go down, because you were out, we decided to, and it goes through and it says, you know, check your waste and garbage and suspicious purchases. And you're like, what? You know, or we have boxes where we placed a wiretap, we did this, we did that, you know, that kind of stuff. Then it says, conducted an inventory of all RFID tagged food and merchandise. See, a lot of people, they need RFID. What the hell is that? You know, and then they go look. You know, And we inspected your computer, browser history, books, spice rack, refrigerator. Spice rack, because you know somebody going, damn, I'm gonna change where I put my weed now. Yeah, you know? Because back then, you know, it was
just
like,
oregano. It's just oregano.
Yeah, it was. That's a good idea too. I wonder if, where we got that idea. But anyway, and then it says one thing is, we're sorry. This information is privileged. Divulging any information of this search is a violation in accordance with the Patriot Act and is punishable by up to 10 years in federal prison, or you may be subjected to indefinite detention, because this is a thing.
Yes.
And they were doing this with librarians in Vermont, I think. They wanted that, because if you even told people that they were searching or looking at their checkout book thing or something, you were in violation. There were some librarians in Vermont said, screw you. And they told everybody, and they prosecuted them. You know, this is like, you're not allowed to tell people we're doing this. Now, this happened with, I think it was LavaBit, that was a secure email. It's kind of a proton mail thing or something. And when they went to him, they go, hey, we need all your subscribers. And they were trying to get the Snowdens or something. And he goes, well, I can't, you know, ensure that my clients, the whole reason they come here is to be private. And here you go. And, well, he couldn't do anything. He couldn't tell anybody. It was a violation of Patriot Act. So he just closed the business. He shut it down. Just shut everything down. Boom, done. So they got him for contempt of court. They tried to prosecute him. You're not allowed to shut down a business that we wanted to surveil. You know, kind of thing. And it's like, it's so amazing, you know. That. So anyway, we were letting people know that. And then it had another section that says, as a result of our visit, feel safer knowing that your government is doing all it can to protect you. The next one was, you are considered a person of interest and may be subject to monitoring, media attention, or be assigned an unmanned aerial surveillance vehicle. Now, keep in mind, this is 08.
Yeah, when it was the year, yeah.
You know, this is, you know, we're always years ahead. You are under arrest and are advised to turn yourself in immediately. And then the one that we checked, now that's just a blank box. Now, the one we checked was this one. Have you received your mandatory vaccination? Keep in mind, now this particular one was 13. You know, it was like January of 13. So
that,
this is
that
like
was H1N1.
Yeah, this is, H1N1 was, I think it was 09, 10. It was right after Obama got in, you know. So that's, anyway. So we were doing this. We're going, have you received your mandatory vaccination? Please call 602-374-6120 or 602-685-6351 to arrange a convenient time to be interviewed. Now, people called.
Yes, they did.
They wanted to know what the hell. It was the newsroom of the radio station or TV station, because we print these two up, and we put two numbers on one and then two different numbers on the other one. So all the media got called. I mean, you know, it was the newsroom at the NBC affiliate, the newsroom at the whatever. And they get hundreds of these calls. They're like, what the hell? You know? And then they'd have to go through and find it. Yeah, and it's Ernie.
It's him. So, libertarians.
So when they did the first time for the Super Bowl, they didn't like that. That was during the Ron Paul Evolution stuff and everything. So when they did that, they called the police, and the Glendale police and the Arizona Republic, they put out an article that said, the headline was, pay no attention to the orange flyer, okay? And they go, oh, it's just, anti-government or activist, something, you know, ne'er-do-well, somebody, something that's just down, don't worry about it. And I go, how did they know? Because what I did on aztiphotline.info is I go, yeah, I didn't care about being secret. It wasn't going to be a secret, you know, very long. So what I did is I put, you have an option when you get a domain that you can make it private, okay, that they can't see who did it or something. I go, okay, I'll do that. Because I knew.
They're going to want to know.
They're going to want to know. And law enforcement's going to go find out. So then they go through and everything, and it's Ernie, you know. I'm just like, yeah, bring it on, bring it on, bring it on. So I know that they did it, you know, because they reported it, you know. And I'm like, nah, 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 nah. And then it said, let's see, authorities for the proceeding postulates, whatever that means, are delegated by the following articles: National Defense Authorization Act of 2012, sections 1021, 1022. Now, this was a lot of people didn't know that they could do all this kind of stuff, and we wanted to let people know, yeah, there's a law, and they're freaking doing it, okay? FYI, you know, I mean, we may be spoofing it, but it's not like it's a pretend. And then it said at the end, it goes, again, we are sorry that we missed you, but rest assured, we know where you live. You know, for more information, aztiphotline.info. And then at the bottom, this is when QR codes were first starting to go. We go, we'll have some fun with that. Yeah, so this was January 13th. And we go, QR code, three QR codes across the bottom. And one said, Truth, Justice, American Way. And I think it was FBI, CIA, and something. I mean, you know, it's just. So this thing was just. So the law enforcement getting this and doing this, they were like going, oh, this is freaking. That's pretty funny, you know. There, I know a lot of the guys. They were like, "Oh man, Ernie, you just so." And I go, "Yeah, yep. You want to prosecute me? You know, what are you gonna do? In the you gotta have evidence, right? They're gonna pull this out. We did the same thing with a declaration to carry concealed and all that. We filed with the county recorder. That you know, we wanted them to come after us because what do they want more than anything else? They don't want people getting pissed. They don't want them to know about this. They don't. So I'm like, come on, man, let's go.
All you need is discovery. Let's just discuss this matter.
Let's do some discovery. Let's get in court. You know, because they knew. And what they do is they try and beat you into the ground and, you know, expenses and so on. Well, I learned how to file federal lawsuits. I went all the way in Ninth Circuit and oral argument before the man. Oh, and Bob flew me. It was right after I got burned. I'm all like, you know, sizzling bacon, man. It was a thing. So I'm all bandaged up because it was only like 3-4 weeks after I got burned that I had the court date. I didn't want to continue it. So we flew up to San Francisco in Bob's plane. And that was a thing, you know. I had to take some pain pills, man, as we're bouncing around. You know, that, ugh. But the so we go in there, and they tried to stop me, but I'm here, you know. So aztiphotline.info, when you went there, it was serious. It's like, yes, we're trying to, you know, make sure and this and that, and, you know, it's kind of. And then we'd have links in there to all of these news articles of them doing it. You know, directives for the meter guy to turn you in and all this kind of. So it was kind of in a serious format. But if you're a law enforcer, you're reading and you're going, oh, man, these guys, this is pretty good, you know. And so people would do it and they get. And I tell you, this is what would happen. By the time you would find my number, you would track it down and you go and these stories are on Freedom's Phoenix and everything. And you get to, by the time you got to me, you knew that we punked you. All right, but who would call? Who would complain? You didn't go on their property. You didn't get out of your car. You know, you just drive. You have somebody in the passenger side, or you can do it on the driver's side. You go through the neighborhood. You lift a lid a little bit. You put the flyer on. You go to the next one. Entire neighborhoods have these orange flyers everywhere. And we kind of target where legislators.
Yeah, remember, we used to do the driveway bombers, little bags with the rocks in it, and you could.
Yeah, yeah. Driveway bombers. We did that. They didn't like calling them driveway bombers. You know? Yeah, they threw a bomb on my driveway and stuff because we were, you know, respectful. We're libertarians. We're respectful of private property. We didn't want to have to go. Well, the thing was with the driveway bombers that you'd have little stuff in there is that you had to bend over. I go, but the trash can flyer. If you didn't like it, you just put it in the trash. It was right there.
It was already halfway in the can.
It was already, we were throwing away for you. You know, it just didn't quite make it in. So this is, when we come back, I'll tell you, you know, that's enough of that. You know, but we're going to do it again. You know, what agent should we do? We should do 4409, just that homage.
Yeah.
4409 is back.
Yeah. Contact Tracer 4409.
Yeah. See, that's what we're going to do, this next one. It's contact tracing.
Because it's coming.
Because contact tracing is this. This is it. This is how they're doing contact tracers. You know, so this whole thing, you know, which box do we do? Total information awareness? No. Contact tracers. Yeah, you feel me? Huh? What, you thought we went away?
Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock continues after the news, live on the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
It's 3 weeks after the election. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News, and President Trump still refuses to concede, again tweeting this morning the election was rigged, claiming his big lawsuit, which he wrote spells out in great detail all the ballot fraud, will be filed soon. The president-elect Joe Biden got the green light to formally plan his January takeover. Fox's Rachel Sutherland has more live.
Dave, the General Services Administration is freeing up more than $6 million for the Biden team, as well as 175,000 square feet of federal office space. President-elect Biden and his team will also be able to receive sensitive intelligence briefings. In a letter, GSA Administrator Emily Murphy said her decision was not made out of fear or favoritism or under any pressure from anyone in the executive branch. Murphy said she received thousands of messages online and by phone from people threatening her, her family, and her pets. Dave.
Rachel, later today, we'll get a look at the Biden national security team.
President-elect Biden and Vice President-elect Harris called their choices unmatched and the best America has to offer. They include Antony Blinken for Secretary of State. John Kerry will be appointed climate czar, and Avril Haines will become the first woman to serve as Director of National Intelligence.
Fox's Lauren Blanchard, the number of new coronavirus cases rose back up yesterday, 169,000. And for a 14th straight day, there was a record amount of COVID patients in hospitals just 2 days before Thanksgiving.
For preparation, you really should try to do everything you can, starting right now, to limit your exposure to people outside of your household.
Surgeon General Dr. Jerome Adams told Fox and Friends they advocate
limiting your number of guests, ideally to less than 10, and then ventilation. Outside is better than inside.
Many states and cities are limiting gatherings to 10 or fewer. In addition to restrictions, in some places, no dining in restaurants again. America's listening to Fox News.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Remember, we are not afraid!
Yeah, unafeared. Here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. Here we have John Ross on. I got you there, John?
Yes.
There he is. Okay, awesome. I have one of your original books in my hand, and I wondered where it went. I got some other paperbacks that we gave away as prizes and stuff before, but I have the original book, and I didn't know where it was, and we're out of friends, and he goes, I have it. It's on the bookshelf back there. You gave it to me. And I go, give me my freak. So I got one of the originals, and we go and we look, and they're going for like $1,000 a piece here. I'm going, holy crap, I'm rich. Woohoo!
Well, wait a minute. That's what they're asking, but I'm not sure they're getting it. Open it up to the beginning and see what printing it is.
It's 96.
Well, I know that's the copyright, but does it say in the early pages, second printing, third printing, fourth printing, anything like that?
Dumb. Yeah. We're looking.
Yeah, he's looking at it. It's which printing is that one? It's one of the early ones. I'm sure it was. We were buying the Maricopa County Libertarian Party and all the activists in Arizona, and you had contacted SAFE, Second Amendment is for Everyone, back in the day, and we were buying these by the case. We gave them to every legislator. We were being buttheads. We go to the gun shows and the BATF, go up to the seller. Are you sure you want to be selling that? Because it's very critical of the the ATF, so they didn't like people even selling it. It was amazing. That's a whole story in and of itself. Let me go ahead and do an intro for you a little bit, and we'll talk about this and your new books coming up. We got to pimp your new books. John Ross is an investment broker and financial advisor in St. Louis, Missouri, and is...
Actually, I'm retired from that.
He's retired financial advisor, and is best known for his book, Unintended Consequences. Now, he has earned degrees in English and economics from Amherst College in Amherst, Massachusetts. Mr. Ross is a certified personal protection instructor and the author of Self-Defense Laws and Violent Crime Rates in the United States, which was the first published work to empirically assess the effect of concealed carry laws on violent crime in America. He has authored several firearms-related technical articles for Precision Shooting Magazine and Machine Gun News. Since the age of 8, Mr. Ross has been an avid participant in many aspects of the shooting sports. He's fired upwards of 20,000 rounds of ammunition per year and is, by his own admission, a member of the gun culture. And that's what this book was really about. Did you see a print date?
No, I think it's a first print because it doesn't have a print on it.
You know, Billy, I'm going to retire on your book, man.
It was done by the Accurate Press in Missouri, so I don't know if they're the ones that were always doing it, but yeah, it doesn't say which printing it is, so I'm assuming it's the first.
Bob and I were both, you know, activists back in the day doing this, God, 25 years ago. You know, we were big fans, man. You know, you want to know how this is going to play? Well, hell, it is playing out. It's like They took your book and made a movie script out of it.
Yeah, it's going to get... going to get there.
So we'll talk about that in a little bit, but you know, tell everybody about your new book that you got coming out.
All right, well, how much time have I got?
Well, we got like 5 minutes here, then we got like three more segments after this, so we're going to go a full hour. We'll be done at 58 after, so you got plenty of time.
Okay, so here's the somewhat long version.
I have my favorite kind.
When the book came out, it implied that in the future we would have a different president. That's how it ended. And we didn't. Clinton was reelected. And everybody wanted a sequel, but every time I started writing one, things didn't fit at all with what was really happening in real life. And I finally realized that I would have to, if I really wanted to write a sequel, it would have to be a sort of alternate parallel universe where things that had really happened since the first book came out didn't happen at all, and we had a whole new alternate history. And I just didn't like the idea of that. So I tried a few things and ultimately gave up, but it was always in the back of my mind. And then in May, I think it was May 23rd of last year, I was watching something on television, and all of a sudden it hit me about how I could write a sequel of sorts that was all about everything that was happening right now and how I could start it with the very end of Unintended Consequences.
So it's a real sequel.
Well, yeah, let's put it this way. The prologue is about 20 pages, maybe less, of starting at the end of Unintended Consequences. And it says something like prologue about 20 years earlier. And then, as I did with my first book, after the prologue, I go back to relevant times in history, some of them quite far back, centuries, to set the stage of how we got to where we are now.
Well, that's kind of what you did in your first book. I think the book started in the Warsaw Ghetto. You know, it was uprising.
Actually, no. It started just after the turn of the century.
Okay, but I remember there was a history lesson.
1906 with Ad Topperwein shooting all those wooden blocks.
Now, that was true, wasn't it?
Of course.
Yeah. So this
all the stuff I put in history is true, except in some cases I inserted a fictional character. My role model for writing this book was Ken Follett. And Ken Follett, with a few exceptions, has mostly written what I would call historic fiction. He sets his story in the middle of a real-life event like Pearl Harbor, and you have his fictional characters experiencing the things that really happened during Pearl Harbor or during a conflict between spies in World War One or something like that. And as with most of his books, in my book I had fictional people talking about and telling what they think about the real life events that were happening at that time, such as the MOVE incident in Philadelphia in 1985, where the mayor ordered his people to
firebomb
drop an improvised bomb on the roof of a building.
Okay, we're going into break. Okay, hold on. We'll be right back. Now we'll be right back. I can't hear you talking over the music that well. So when we come back, more John Ross. This is going to be fun. You know, he's got a new book. We're going to hear about the new book. This book is like 860-something pages. It's like Atlas Shrugged for guns. I mean, you know, I read it was a fascinating read. I know people, once they get into it, they just sit down and they're there for a week. We'll be right back.
From the second letter of Captain Mark. Any pirate knows that commerce is communication. Markets condense oceans of information into a single price. Innovations in communication are circumventing the scrutiny of the crown. This signals a change in the coin of the realm. The crown uses digital currency to surveil, censor, seize, and destroy wealth at will, so pirate currency must protect us from this weaponized money. We need to move funds further, faster, cheaper, and without third-party observation, basing decisions on an accelerating flow of information. So pirates require nearly instantaneous transactions with no arbitrary limits on volume or artificial influences on fees. Most importantly, a pirate currency must preclude centralization. Otherwise, it will become another link in our crown. A superior currency will result in the obsolescence of the coin of the realm and the extinction of the crown itself. Trade above the grid. Join us at PiratesWithoutBorders.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Oh, don't call. We're on the bus. In Tonopah, Arizona, we got John Ross on. He's telling us about his process and his new book is coming. We're building up to that. Unintended Consequences was a milestone for a lot of things, and it was one of the first and most comprehensive critique of the BATF. And it was BATFE or whatever. And it got reviewed by Claire Wolf. That said, we're big fans of Claire. She's spoken at her Freedom Summits and stuff, and she said, it's like a Harlequin romance novel for men. That's how she described it. And I read, I go, yeah, that's pretty much it. That's it. And then Vince Aprino, it's a good friend. He was a big fan of it and so on. And I think it inspired him to write a lot of stuff, too. He wrote Send in the Waco Killers and Battle of Carl Draga and Black Arrow and so on. So, John, you were telling us your process, of taking historical significant events in history and then putting a character in the middle of it and doing that. And so we could talk about the book forever. It's 800 whatever pages. I mean, damn, we could spend. I suggest people read it, but you go on Amazon, and I had a friend that bought one for he was a retired gentleman that bought one for he was a fan of the book. He just couldn't afford to get it, and he bought it for him as a gift, and it was $350. used. And I'm going, damn. You know, so I keep saying, I'm going, John, when we going to get some books? Well, then I ordered them, and you can get them in paperback, I think, still, can you?
Yeah, it's never been out of print. The problem was that for quite a while, my publisher quit doing business with Amazon, and a lot of people seem to think that if Amazon doesn't list a book, it isn't available anywhere else. Now, you will see, of course, used copies where people are asking huge amounts of money, but the publisher has always had new copies, now soft cover, available at reasonable cost. And now he's back again doing business with Amazon. So if you look under the paperback section when you look it up on Amazon, you'll see new copies for, I think, $40.
Now, I know that you and I, we've talked before over the years, and that technology is such now with special internet, you know, services, you never decentralized interplanetary file sharing of files that all forever and always, if you really, really, really want it and you want to read it on, you know, whatever device and PDF, it's out there. You know, there's just no getting around it. But the thing is that you want to touchy-feely and support John Ross for writing the book and, you know, to encourage him to write another one. So let's get up to, before we run out of time, let's talk about the new book and tell me, well, then we'll get back to, you know, some of the things that happened to you and the man didn't like it. We'll talk about that too. But tell us about the new book. What's it going to be about?
Well, first of all, it's not finished, but it's getting close. I had originally intended to have it out by the conventions. And as it got closer, I realized that a whole bunch of stuff could happen before the election and during the election that might make the book instantly dated and obsolete. So I realized it was going to depend on what happened before, during, and after the presidential election.
Yeah, it ain't even over yet.
Exactly. So I'm still writing what's happening, events that are happening right now. Every time I click on a new day in on my computer screen and look at the news items, they give me more material.
Of course.
So anyway, I'm let's put it this way. From the standpoint of this book that I am writing, I have to say that I am pleased with what's happening. Now, that doesn't mean I'm personally pleased, but this makes for great
movies! The movie. You know, God, I forgot the name. What was the Howard? What was the Bowman? What was that the main character's name?
Henry Bowman.
Henry Bowman. Okay, this is. I know guys that have that as their email handle. You know, this has been. You had such a cultural impact on this, and I know the new book is going to be the same. You know, romp. I mean, it was just. I tell you, from activist standpoint, it was very accurate in how we thought that this was going to play out. You know, this is what we were thinking was, you know, when this goes, it's going to be like this. It's just going to be individuals doing individual actions. It's a very decentralized thing, and they sparked a lot of it, and it inspired a lot of our activism, too. So you had a big impact on this. When you wrote the book and it first came out, did you anticipate the response from the government the way it happened?
Not really. And I don't think the government response was all that great. Yes, there were people claiming to be government agents that were making veiled threats and some not so veiled threats to some people set up at gun shows that were selling my book. But when my lawyer wrote a three-page letter to the ATF and asked that everybody disseminate it as widely as possible, that ended. And this was something that wasn't happening just in one little place. It was over multiple states that these threats were coming in.
Oh, no, and I witnessed it. We saw it here. They did not like it. We had to ship it. It was called North Mountain Books. You remember that, Bob? You know, North Mountain Books was one of the acts. They happened to have a little technical manual a bookstore in North Phoenix in the Sunny Slope area. And he was the only, you know, a lot of the others, they wouldn't even do it. You know, they became such a thing, they wouldn't do it. So we had, you know, cases of them shipped to him. You know, so fortunately, there's like Libertarian owned the bookstore. You know, that I'm telling you from the ground here, this is, and we gave, they were claiming that we were threatening or terrorist or whatever the hell because we gave them all the legislators. They're like, oh, what are you saying? I'm going, you know, you guys just get over it. So did they ever threaten you? Did they ever come after, try and make your life hell?
I would have to say no. I'll tell you what did happen, which was very interesting.
We're gonna go into break, and you said what did happen, very interesting, and the break music just started. So I'm like, I hate that.
Okay.
All right, everybody, get on the edge of your seat. When we come back, John Ross is gonna. I'm gonna tell you something interesting that happened. Well, we want to know that interesting thing when we come back. So don't forget where you are. Okay. Remember this story, John. When we come back,
yes, I will.
All right, cool. 4 minutes. We come back. We'll find out the interesting thing that happened. We got two more segments, and we're going to have some fun. We'll be right back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
And Mr. John Ross, unintended consequences, an infamous author. I had to look that up. Infamous means like famous but bad, you know, and I don't think he's that bad. This is gonna be good. You know, the John, you had an interesting story you want to tell, man. We're on the edge of our seat. Go.
Okay. Well, I had been a federal firearms licensee since 1978, and I had been a full auto dealer, you know, class 3 machine guns and the like, since 1983.
So automatic machine gun dealer, not a auto car dealer.
Right. Machine gun and suppressor dealer.
Okay.
And that started in 1983. And by the time my book came out, which was really 1996, ATF has a policy of generally doing an annual compliance inspection. So almost every year I'd had an agent come over and look at my books and make sure everything was done properly. Well, I don't know if your listeners will all know this or remember it, but with the Clinton administration, they made a concerted effort to get rid of people running gun businesses out of their homes.
Yep, they
and
did.
They wanted you to have a brick-and-mortar storefront in almost all cases. And I explained to them that I was doing a fair amount of business, but that no storefront would be secure enough, and I was keeping my stuff in a secure bank vault and doing business with other dealers by mail. And they said that was okay, but they wanted to have a compliance inspection. This was in 96.
Mm.
And I said truthfully, as is in my book, well, I'm well aware that your registry is wrong. So you'll need to provide me with a list of what you think I have, and I'll correct it. And they said, well, no, you just show us what you have. And I said, not before I find out what your records say I have. And we went back and forth, and this was when my license was up for renewal. And then I got a phone call that said, we just need to ask you a few questions, and then we'll renew your license. And they asked me questions like, do you have regular business hours? Yes. Do you intend to make a profit? Yes, and I am. Are you buying only for yourself? No. I have a number of sales every month or year, all at a profit. Okay, we're issuing your new license. Great. So they issued me my new license, and from that point on, in 1996, I never got another contact for my annual inspection.
Well, I did lucky not have, you.
I did not have anybody contact me saying they wanted to schedule a compliance inspection until 2014.
Woo.
Okay, so that's like 17 years later. So I said, okay, how many NFA weapons are you showing are in my possession? And they said something like 38 or something like that. I said, well, no, it's more than double that. So your records are wrong. And they're like, oh, no. And the guy who said he was going to be doing the inspection, you know, who did, he said, look, this is going to take at least a week. So he scheduled himself to show up at 8 in the morning on Monday, and he was booking 8 to 5 for the entire week, he said. So when he showed up, I had my lawyer with me. And I said, I want to make things clear here. I want to comply with your requests in all possible ways, but I don't want to do anything that my lawyer advises me not to. So he said, well, that's very well and good. And then he looked at what I had done. I had laid out all of my purchases in chronological order, going back to 1983, things that I purchased that I still had, and all of my sales laid out in chronological order, all the bound books, with everything in a form for him to easily go through it. And so he started at 8 o'clock or 8:30 on Monday morning, and at 12:30, a little after noon, he said, we've gotten a lot more done than I thought. I'm going to knock off for today. I'll be back in the morning. Okay. Shows up the next morning at 10, works for 2 hours, and quits again around noon. Says he'll be back the following morning. Comes back on Wednesday again at 10. And at lunchtime, he says, well, I'm done. He said, I have to tell you, I have never had any licensee have his records in such an easy way to get all of the information that we needed. And he gave me a clean bill of health up to that point, and, you know, shook my hand and said, thank you very much. So I felt pretty good about that. And I didn't get another request for a compliance inspection the next year, 2015. And then in 2017, I needed to renew my license. You need to do that every 3 years, whether you're a regular dealer or a class three. And I sent all the stuff in, and they said, we're backlogged, and they gave me an extension letter that let me keep doing business, even though my license had expired in July. And so I keep contacting him and keep in touch with him. And This was happening in 2016. July of 2016 was when my license had expired. And they're giving me extension letters. Well, they quit responding to my requests for either more extension letters or a renewed license. They quit taking any of my calls or emails. Near as I can figure, the moment Donald Trump was elected. And I just didn't hear from them, and they wouldn't take my calls. And then 3 days before Donald Trump was sworn in 2017, in January, they informed me that they hadn't renewed an extension letter for over 30 days, and that meant that I could not get my license renewed, and if I wanted to, I would have to start the process entirely from scratch.
Okay, we've got to leave it there until the next segment, you know, because we're going into break, but we're on the edge of our seat, man. You're going to have to whip through it here when we get to the next segment. But this is, we know when this was going on, because we had friends that had FFL, and how they did it, they said, if you're not able to run a home business, then you can't, it's not legal to be an FFL in the city. They're using municipal stuff all over the country.
Love what we do? Please help support our international satellite channels at patreon.lrn.fm. That's patreon.lrn.fm.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
And John Ross, Bob Anderson sitting in. This is interesting. Okay, so it's a few days before Trump is inaugurated. The man decided to tell John Ross after, 30, 40 years, we're not renewing your license. You got to do it all over again. So what happened then, John?
Well, as I was about to say, in order for me to do that, first of all of the weapons that were in my possession are now personal property. And if I were to apply to get a license again, assuming they granted me one, then the licensee, me, would have to get the guns all transferred back to the license from me as an individual, and that's $200 per unit. So we're talking, you know, $16,000 here. And I wasn't absolutely certain that they would grant me a new license, and I got to thinking, well, I've really got all the stuff I would ever want to keep and then some. So, okay, I don't need to be a dealer anymore. And ATF has ruled always that you are allowed to dispose of a collection without being accused of dealing without a license. So, for example, I had over 200 of the 500 Smith & Wessons that I'd specially designed, and then the factory had done a 500-gun run for me. I still had over 200 of them left, so it's perfectly legal for me to sell them as an individual because I'm disposing of a collection. So I'm not ordering anything anymore because I'm not a dealer. And I'm legally out of the business, but I am still selling off the stuff that I had in inventory that was for sale when I was a dealer. So that's where I am now.
You know, why do you think that they did that? Because I remember when this happened. We had a friend that was He had a drywall company or something, but he was an FFL. And this was in the mid-90s when their Clinton administration they were doing this. They wanted to make it to where, because people being a federal firearms licensee, you could sell from your kitchen table. I mean, you know, people, it was like, it was America. I mean, you know, and we'd see some, you know, surplus $110 CZ-52, whatever the heck it was, that Tokarov round thing. We'd get a bunch of them because they were powerful and they penetrated body armor for $110. We go, we want a bunch of those. And we were just, you know, we'd go to them, get them just out of, because we could. And we're poor and we're young and Makarovs and crap like that. But the thing was is that then all of a sudden they were using city ordinances for business, anything they could to try and stop the flow of firearms legally. They wanted to shut down everything. Well, you know, had all your stuff in a row and all nice and bound. You remind me of my dad and his taxes. I'm like, yay. But the you get all nice and organized. They go, okay, we're not dealing with John anymore. Until they wanted to deal with you. So Trump comes in, and you and a bunch of other people like you, I am sure, they did whatever they could to try and stop the flow of firearms. Why? What's going on? Is this going to be in your book? Huh? Huh? Got some stuff about it in your book?
Probably not. I mean, that's an old story. The people that are against gun rights are always against gun rights. Because that's the tip of the spear in terms of liberty. So I don't have any problem with someone advocating, the abolishing the Second Amendment, because that's free speech. But I think the moment that anyone who's in either a political office or is running for a political office does it, then that's tantamount to treason. Example of that being Beto O'Rourke. When he says, elect me and I'll confiscate, that ought to be prima facie evidence that he's not fit for office. And if he held elective office, he should be tried for treason. There's always going to be anti-freedom opponents, and instead of whining about it, we just need to spit on our hands and get in the fight. You know, the ink wasn't even dry on the Constitution when opponents of freedom started trying to put restrictions on people. I mean, look up the Whiskey Rebellion.
Yeah.
So you know, it doesn't do any good to complain about this. You know, that's like complaining that there's mosquitoes in the summer, you know.
Well, what do you think?
Well,
where's the solution? Before we run out of time here, I want to get the solutions. You know, one, your books. I mean, that helped. I mean, that was cool. It's time to feed the hogs. But, you know, but the main thing is that it's just general public opinion. And they have, you know, they, them, those, because they, who are they? They're the ones who won't leave me alone. That's who they are, okay? Well, the thing is that the general public opinion there, that's where we win. I mean, we just, there's so many examples of why gun rights are so important, and we're finding out right now. It is getting bad. So how bad
sure,
do you...
Sure, with all the first-time gun buyers with these riots and looting and burning. You remember the couple that are both lawyers here in St. Louis that were on their
front porch?
On their front porch?
Yeah.
That street, about five houses from their house, that's where I grew up. As a child and through... And up until 2012, when my mother died, that's where my family lived. And, these events are making a lot of people wake up and look at how many first-time gun buyers there have been lately, including a lot of people that thought they were anti-gun.
Millions.
Right.
So, you know, it's all good things happening about people having their eyes open.
Oh, I tell you, the eyes open. We had a friend of ours has a hot dog cart, and he was all of a sudden he got a call from a gun dealer here in Phoenix, and they said, "Hey, man, we got long lines out. Can you come and you know feed people?" So he went out in the parking lot and opened up his hot dog cart. Man, he did bank. He'd selling out for days. And what it was is some guys, you know, liberal in his Mercedes comes up with a big wad of cash, and he just like goes to the front of the line. I got, y'all get me a gun, buy one, I got money. And they go, nope, one, back of the line, but it's not going to do you any good because the back of the line, these are the guys that had to wait 3 days that are here to pick up their gun. So he's going, nope, yeah, yeah. And he's like, well, of course, these are guys that are in support of gun control. And they're just, all of a sudden, they thought, well, it wouldn't apply to them if they had a bunch of guns. All of a sudden, they're finding out when you a right delayed is a right denied, you know. So all these gun waiting things, everything we created in 94, right before we became aware of your book and so on, it was called Second Amendment is for Everyone, which is safe. Are you a safe gun owner? Are you an unsafe congressman? I mean, we have a lot of fun with this, but it's all been making fun of this kind of stuff. But now people are starting to realize when they need it, when they want it, they can't get it.
Ain't so funny now, is it?
Yeah, ain't so funny now, is it, Mr. Funny Man?
There, let me just interject something here about something you said earlier. You mentioned Claire Wolfe. And Claire Wolfe had liked a lot of the pieces that I had written on my website, but she really didn't like my book, at least not when it first came out. She thought, as she said, a Harlequin romance for guys. And she thought it was completely unrealistic. And that was why that she didn't want to do a review of it, even though she kept getting people asking her to. Then finally, a few years later, everlasting credit, she said, "I have to admit that when I said John Ross's book was wildly unrealistic, I was wrong."
You know, we're missing the best part over the, you know, because the way we got the system in, we're missing the...
Always.
I know. He's got... You know, John, this is great. We got to have you back again. Will you come back again? It's going to be lots to talk about.
Sure.
Yep, we're going to do it. John Ross. Yeah, he's been on a few times, you know. We'll be right back, guys. In the next hour, we got... Hold on a second, John. In the next hour, we got Al Soleil. You know, GradientServer.com on IPFS indexing.
Live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared...
Hello?
Yeah, we got you. Hold on.
Shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war,
hello?
I remember that matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Unafeared, you're undeclared, you're independent to me. Ernest Hancock, we got Al Soleil. Al, can you hear me? Are you there, buddy? Al, I got you. Al.
Al, can you hear me? Are you there, buddy?
Hello?
Yeah, I hear you. Can you hear me? He can't hear me. Can you hear me, Al? Al?
Hello?
Al, can you hear me?
Hello?
Al? All right. Text him. You know, let him know the call back. We're going to restart this computer. Go ahead and restart that one and do it, and we'll get him back. I'll go ahead and do an introduction for him, and we'll get him back. Yeah, Al, you're listening on the stream, and I'm not sure why we're not hearing. You're not hearing me. Let me see. I got, you know, the buttons. You know, I can hear you. So we're going to go ahead and restart this computer and try and have you come back.
You're not hearing me. Let me see. I got, you know, all the buttons. Now I can hear you. So we're going to go ahead and restart this computer and try to...
Okay, so that's what we're going to do. Go ahead and restart it and do it. All right, sorry, man. You know, we're gonna try and reconnect. Now, let me go ahead and do the intro for Al. Al Soleil, he designs and builds software solution every day, and he's been doing that for more than 20 years. He's also a blogger. Started in 1999, a few months after the term blog was coined. He published 4 programming books. The last in 2003. His current passion is helping build the decentralized web. Excuse me. His blog is alayham.com. It's alayham.com. You know, it's Arabic, I think. You know, alayham. Well, he's going to tell us what it means. alayham.com. And his latest project is gradientserver.com. GRADIENT. SERVER.com, gradientserver.com. It's a decentralization technology for the free and the brave. A gradient server is a tool for free speech defenders. It is a store of information from external sources, allows indexing, searching, distributing, and sharing information, allows enriching the information with metadata. Now, this is, you know, this is going to help with search and all that kind of stuff. Also, Donna, check the speaker settings on that to make sure it's got the right thing there. And we're admitting them now. Let me go ahead and finish this. A gradient, a collection of information from different sources, colors, and directions. You know, you can host a gradient server, get the source code, read the documentation, use a gradient server, our own demo, more servers coming. Now, this information is in the show notes in the third hour today. All right. Do I got you there, Al? Well, I tell you what. Go ahead, and if you're listening on the stream.
Yes, I had like to do some configuration on my machine just to hear you.
Okay, so you can hear me live now, right? Well, go ahead and you're listening on the stream. Go ahead.
Yes, I can hear you live now.
Okay.
But from the stream, not from the Zoom meeting.
Yeah, there's a delay, so it's going to be a pain in the butt. All right, well, go ahead and monologue me. Tell me everything about you and what you're doing. We're going to go into break in a few minutes here. Then maybe we can get it live and set up in the break. And then, but go ahead and tell us about yourself and what you're working on. We're very excited to talk to you. I'm sorry about that. We'll see. I don't know if it's our end or your end. But go ahead right now. Go ahead and tell us every little old thing about you. Go.
Okay, so, okay, let me start by introducing myself. I'm a developer, a programmer. I have been building solutions for people for like 20 years. And during these years, I have accumulated some experience regarding distributed solutions. And now I see like that the world is moving towards centralization. And like I don't like that. I want to help the people, to help the world fight centralization and adopt decentralizations. And I don't think I need to explain why to you or to your audience. One of the biggest problems that we are facing regarding this is with search engines and centralized search engines. So I wanted I started thinking about tools, how we can decentralize search. And I created a tool for that. I call it Gradient Server. And I would like to share it with your community and to invite you and your community to use it. Gradient Server is designed to be used by a small community, by a group of people who have similar interests. And I call it gradient because I got this from the meaning of the word gradient. Gradient in math means that it is a representation of a function on a plane. And normally it is represented by arrows going from different directions and pointing in different directions. And sometimes they are in opposing directions. a gradient also in computer graphics is like a continuous move of colors between two or more key colors. So I took the idea and created or called this tool Gradient Server, because it allows people who are of different colors, of different who have ideas of different colors, ideas of different directions, ideas of different types, to work together and to decentralize from the centralized controlled platforms.
Yeah, no, I understand. Keep entertaining us, man. We're going in to break in about 30 seconds, and we're going to go ahead and try and... There's something with the audio going out that you're not... I'm going to try and play with the settings here. But when we come back, I need to know how we... I think you listened to the show, or you were interested in IPFS and tips for IPFS indexing using your gradient servers. So we're interested. And if you got coding skills, we're looking for guys just like you. So we're going into break. We'll be right back in just a moment. Stay right there, and I'll see if I can do some setting thing here or something. I don't know if it's my end or your end, but we'll work on it. Al Soleil, go check it out, gradientserver.com. In the show notes in the archive has all the goodies, all the information. Go check it out, and we'll see what we can get with Al here in just a little bit. We'll be right back. Man, that sucks.
I hear you on the stream.
Okay. Well, shoot. This is, I tell you what. Tell us how you know about using IPFS. We're looking to do search, and we need indexing and so on. All these kinds of things. We're using IPFS for communication. Tell us what you know about that. That's what we're interested in, and we'll reschedule and get this fixed up and do it maybe tomorrow or next week, and we'll have you back and we'll get a clean show. But go ahead and monologue us and talk to us. We go to 28 after the hour, so you got like 7 minutes here to tell us everything about what you're doing. Go.
Okay, so first we need to understand that the search engine by itself, it is like, it does not care where the information is hosted. It just provides a link. So if the link is on FTP, it will work. If the link is on HTTP, it will work. If the link is on IPFS, it will work. If the link is on BitTorrent, it will work. What you need to do is to have like the search capability, the indexing and searching capability, and you need to provide the link with some data about the link that can be indexed. So in this context, what you need to build in order to build a search engine, what you need to do is you need to have a cache of documents that need to be searched. Each document has some metadata with the link to the original document. So we have a cache that contains links to other places. We need an index for this cache of documents so that we know where we are searching for, what is the context of this document. We need a search algorithm, and we need to be able to pull new documents to enrich our cache of documents on the go. And this is what I built with Gradient Server. I built a tool that you could use to cache documents, to aggregate documents from the web using standard protocols. And the tool itself comes with a search engine using like one of the leading enterprise search engines in the world. It is free and open source. It's called Apache Solr. The tool itself is built also on an excellent content management system called Drupal. So we integrate Drupal with Apache Solr with some extra like additions from Gradient Servers, so that we enable people to collect information from the web, enrich this information, and repackage this information in different ways. Now, one of the ways that you could do is like offer it as a search engine, but you can do more than that. You could, for example, build a website that contains links to new, like if you are powering it using to power a community, you could build a website that that contains links to new what's happening in the community, new blog posts in the community, what every site in the community has published, the things that normally search engines do not provide, because search engines, they monetize the search data. They don't give you the search data for free. You could also use this same data to power mobile applications. So you get the data, and your Gradient server will act as the back end for mobile applications that can pull the data and show the users, provide services to the users. And a part of mobile applications, you could use it for like to power TV applications as well. So imagine that you get your entire content on your site bins, and you tag some content as this is educational content, and some other people or maybe yourself, you build like a TV app so that people can sit on their TVs and watch your educational content from your IPFS network directly to their TVs. Gradient server here does not like serve the information. It just plays the role of indexing the content and repackaging it for other people to use it. During this, while we are working on this content, we aggregate it from different websites using standard protocol. And I know you are a big fan of the RSS protocol. We use RSS to get the new content from, like, what's new from the sources. But you could also use the sitemaps.org protocol that I think you are using also for aggregating websites into your site bins. So you could use sitemaps.org protocol, and you get information. It depends on what you want to do with the information and what metadata or how you want to enrich this information. Now, one of the other uses of this of a gradient server is that you could use it as a tool to support free speech, other than like or in addition to using it to for indexing IPFS, you could use it as a tool to support free speech. Now, imagine that you have you see that the people around us and how they are censored and deplatformed, and you want to fight censorship. So you create a gradient server, and you aggregate all the content from these people. Now somebody, he sees that, he comes to your gradient server, and he sees that, look, these three, four, five sites that I want to share on my site. I want to get the feeds from these five sites and put them on my site. He could create a gradient on your server, and the gradient gives the your user the combined feed of these like four, five, six sites, and he puts these sites on the customer puts it on his site. So somebody comes to his site and he clicks on the link. The link does not take the user to Gradient server. It takes the user to the original information. So this way, the original source of the information got an organic page view, an organic visit, not a manufactured visit. The same thing that they used to get from Google before they got like deplatformed or shadow banned on Google. So this is a tool for a community of people to support each other and collectively and combat censorship in this way.
Okay, we're going into break, and I'm getting the idea of what you're doing. I got a bunch of questions, but it's not going to work in this delay. And I'm wondering if there's because he's overseas. It may be a bandwidth problem coming out of here on our upload, but we're going to go ahead and get this taken care of. And if we have to, because we need to, make sure we got this working for. We're doing a big Corbett thing tonight, So I got to fix this, So Al, hold on a second. We'll see if we can, work this out. But I got a bunch of questions because it's the metadata that you're organizing from IPFS file.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Okay, we're back with Al.
Okay, we're back with Al.
I can't have my headphones.
I'm not talking about servers. I don't have servers. I'm not selling services on a server. I'm just providing free and open source software for anybody who has a server that wants to host this information to do that. The way it works is that currently, your concept is like you have your own information and you are a single information provider. Gradient Server can work with a single information provider, but it is designed for multiple information providers, for a community. I built it for a community, not for a single organization. Like for a community of people who have different interests. Some people are interested in, for example, religion. Some people are interested in politics. Some people are interested in different topics. And a gradient server can collect information regarding all these interests from different types of sources and aggregate them and like organize the metadata and allow the people who run the gradient server to enrich this metadata and to make this data available for the community to search and to find the information they need.
Okay, well, community. Okay, what the heck does that mean?
You could be like a city. You could be like a group of people who
to search the metadata so that you can find the hash to download. That's kind of a yes or no question.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Boom! You're my new best friend.
yes. But yes, you heard yes. But I still did not test it. Like the reason for me contacting you originally is that I'd like to run a project with you to test this feature, to be able to test if Gradient Server can do really search through your IBFS content. Okay. So the way we do it is the same way we do it with any other protocol that we use for search. We do it the same for web pages. We do the same for FTP, for torrent, for all other protocols. You need to get the document and some metadata about the document. And then you feed it to your search technology. Now the search technology, I am very confident about. It's not what I built, but it has been built by like very, very like, it is an enterprise search technology and it is free and open source and it is included with so many like leading solutions. So you can, I think I trust this technology and I invite people to trust it and use it. But what we can add is the way we get the documents and the metadata about the documents. And this depends on the protocol that we need to design to include between Gradient Server and your technical team.
Okay. I'm waiting on you now.
I'm calling you for that. This is the reason why I contacted you. Let me tell you about what you can do with Gradient Server right now, out of the box. Now, if you take it right now, okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so if you take Gradient Server right now, and if you go to demo.gradientserver.com, you will see that we have an example of some data that we collect. You will see yourself there, you will see James Corbett there, and a few other people that I collect the data automatically via RSS right now. And you can search through the data, so you can test the search experience, see how search is going. You can see that all the links on Gradient Server, they take you to the original information sources. So it's designed not as a website, but as a service. There is also a demo of how you can get the same information using web and using JSON, the JSON protocol, or the JSON format, and using XML format, depends on the application that is going to consume this information. So Gradient Server is designed as a transparent like proxy between the consumers of the information and the original like sources of the information.
Okay, why? Why is that new? How is it that?
How is it that?
you're using that, okay, and using I need that, to use it.
And I need
it's
to use
it. It's a new something. What's new about it? Why?
What's new about it? Why?
Okay, so why? Because I want to decentralize the web. Like normally, like the original problem that brought us together now is that we had too much centralization in search. That made it like that provoked a talk like the Library of Alexandria is burning. So we all know, like James Corbett, you, I, and so many people, we know that what is happening now is wrong. Like the type of censorship that Google is doing is wrong, and it is going to fire back against them. So how is it going to fire back? How are we going to solve the problem? Like, we have the solution that James came with, which is like an amazing solution. You be your own library. So you download the content that you have, and that's normal. Everybody should do that, and I agree with that. We have another solution that Richard Grove also talked about on your show. So you get some of the people that you know, and you try to promote them because they are censored. So you, James says you save some of the books. Richard Grove says, let's save some of the books as well. What I want to do is to enable people to build their own library, to be competitors to Google. And I would like, if this endeavor goes succeeds with me, and if people start adopting the gradient server technology, and in maybe in 10 years we have like 10,000 gradient servers.
See,
run
okay,
by,
I need to understand this.
And,
so hold on a second.
And run by also by human intelligence. I'd like to see how Google's AI will compete with the collective intelligence of like 10,000 humans.
So I'm going to go ahead and
we'll talk to you next week. All right, man.
Okay. Thank you for having me.
All right. Peace, brother. Bye.
All right, peace, brother. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, turn that off. All right. Am I doubling up still? No. All right. Damn, that was painful.
Something weird there.
Not sure if he was just listening to the stream, whether it was something on his click, and somehow what Donna did, what she did, made it so he could hear it. That's pretty bizarre.
I have no idea. That was weird. But, screw the man. We got it fixed anyway. So we got the information. Basically, this is what's going on. You have, there's a whole different way of looking at the way the internet is. Bob and I went through this. We got our first emails in like 93, 94, and we could see what was happening. It was going to be people served it, and you just had access to these different files, or you could do web pages and all we were playing with. But we could see there were increased consolidation of everything, and we knew this is not going to go well. In 96, we knew that when it goes to video, then it was time for Freedom's Phoenix, which is what we did. But there's way, way too many points of kick your butt. It is, the DNS naming system that goes to an IP, they're going to be able to control that. That's coming next. The internet service providers, you even have an account that you can send ones and zeros on, like your email and so on, like MailChimp, they shut that down. So they can surveil everything. But what if we are our own servers and they pull the protocols of these different platforms from us instead of loading it to them? They can load it from our files. That's what we're working on.